Well, greetings, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining us for a very special event tonight. It's a pleasure to have you all here. And on behalf of AIMC Berkeley, I have the honor of introducing a true scholar in our medicine. Lonnie Jarrett is an internationally recognized author, a practitioner, and a teacher of Chinese medicine. He's been studying our medicine since 1980 and has published in leading professional journals. And you are all certainly familiar with his texts, Nourishing Destiny and The Clinical Practice of Chinese Medicine.
Available at a good price.
And in addition to his scholarship, Lonnie is also a full-time practitioner in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. So please join me in giving a warm welcome to Lonnie Jarrett.
Thank you very much. So I extend my thanks to the school for inviting me here, and for all of you for coming out tonight on a beautiful night. My friend George, he says, the sun is going to go soon. It's going to be foggy for the next 4 months. Is that true?
Yes.
But he said, it depends where you stand. He said, every neighborhood's different.
Yes.
It's very beautiful out here. I haven't been here since 1977. So it's a long time. When I was a kid, my cousin lived here, Beverly, who started the Black Panthers with Eldridge Cleaver was her lover. The book Soul on Ice is letters between Eldridge and Beverly. And she was Jerry Rubin's lawyer and put the Freedom of Information Act through the past the Supreme Court. And I come out and visit her a bit. Last time I was here, I was at a welcome back party for Huey Newton down here in Berkeley, but that was another time. It was very beautiful, and why aren't they here? Shouldn't all these seats be full? What is up with your classmates?
They're probably out there enjoying the weather.
I know. That's the postmodern condition. People go, well, this sounds really good, but I'll see what my feelings tell me 30 seconds before it starts. And then I'll make a decision. Go with the flow. So I'm teaching this weekend. Saturday and Sunday I'm teaching a full course, and I got a call to come over and, you know, from your school, and they said, will you come talk to our students? I said, sure, I'd love to do it. And I don't really have any, I didn't plan a formal talk, but I'm going to talk for a while, and then I'm going to just open it up to questions, and we can just do question and answer. And if at any point when I'm talking, if there's anything that you'd like to interject or ask, just raise your hand and we just turn it into a discussion. Okay, sound good? So what I'd like to talk about is what is a sane and rational context for the practice of Chinese medicine in the 21st century. Does that sound good? See, Chinese medicine has we're very proud that we have a very long history. Right? Isn't everyone proud of that? You say, how do we know it works? You say, it's been done for 4,000 years. See, 4,000 years of history, that's good, but it can also be a burden, right? Right? I mean, if you know, 27 years of history can be a burden depending on your attitude. And by the time, I'm 51, so 51 years could be a great burden depending on your attitude, right? You ever notice that some people don't change much after they're 20? And they just keep becoming more so and more so. Do you know? Okay. And they always think in their heads that someday they'll change. Do you know what I mean? So the condition of most people is they're going to need the rest of their life to get over whatever part of life they've experienced already. You ever run into any patients like that? Do you know anyone like that? That in their mind, they're in a process of healing. And if you ask them, you know, well, how long have you been healing? How long have been people out here in California been healing? You invented healing out here, right? If I talk about the evolution of consciousness on the East Coast, people say consciousness doesn't evolve. But if you talk about the evolution of consciousness out here, someone says, oh, I know all about it. I wrote a paper on it 35 years ago. Well, it's true. And so if we're going to look at what a really rational perspective would be on the practice of our medicine, because the practice of Western medicine, it's never going to evolve, right? A bone is broken, fix the bone. Right? Woman needs a C-section, give her a C-section. The thyroid's not producing thyroxine, give Synthroid. And we may have better and better and better and better ways to do that, but the essential strategy won't ever change. Why has Chinese medicine been around for 4,000 years? It's because it's been able to adapt in every generation to the needs of that generation. The medicine's been able to evolve, right? And you can see that evolution in the literature of the medicine, right? So when the Shang Han Lun came out, that was quite different from the Nei Ching, wasn't it? And the medicine continues to evolve, and unfortunately devolve. But we're just going to talk about evolution. So what's an appropriate evolution? What's the context we're living in? If you want to know what sense would this medicine make, which I believe is the deepest medicine on the planet, what sense would this medicine make in the 21st century in the population that's practicing it and for the population that can generally afford to pay for it, you know, we have to look at that. So we have to understand what's the context we live in. What is the time we're living in? What's facing us? Is it the same thing? Is the time we live in, is it the same as when the classic texts were written, 500, 300 BC? You think anything's changed? Things have changed, right? You notice things are changing very, very fast. That's one thing that's changing. 500 BC, things weren't changing fast, were they? You think Lao Tzu said, Jesus, I've had this abacus now for 3 months and they've already come out with a new model? Probably not, right? I need a new abacus, but I'm waiting because they're going to release the new one in April. Like, God, this thing is slow. So you get the idea. You read the Tao Te Ching, and Lao Tzu said that an enlightened person should live in their town, sit outside their hut, and hear the dogs barking and the roosters crowing in the next town, but never meet their owners. How far away do you think you'd have to be to hear a rooster crow? So what's the furthest distance you could be from a rooster crowing and still hear it? I mean, I'd have to be next to it because I played in electric rock bands for 40 years. But a person who had frequency response over 8 kilohertz, could you hear rooster crow a quarter mile away? Half a mile? Hard to know, right?
Pretty loud.
If it was in a valley, maybe half a mile. Do you think 5 miles? No. It's kind of antisocial, don't you think? I know there's another town 2,700 yards from here, but I'm never going to meet the people who live there. And now you've got your laptop or your iPod Touch or your iPhone, and you've got the sum total knowledge base of the human world in the palm of your hand. You can get on Skype and teleconference with 5 people, and each can be on a different continent. Right? And nobody here would even think of that, and it's all about connection. So things have really changed. All the action now seems to be in human connection, right? So the orientation of where we are, you notice we're going to global centrism, right? World centrism. Would I have to explain to anyone in this room why it's important to recycle? You totally take it for granted. I'd have to explain to George Bush why it's important, though, wouldn't I? It's not because he's stupid. He's at a different developmental level. Just at a different developmental level. His foundational assumptions about the universe he's perceiving are nation-centric. It's nationalistic. Does anyone in here primarily identify themselves as being an American? Anyone? Citizen of the world, right? Where are you from?
America.
Yeah? And your primary identification is with being an American?
It's in the top 5 primaries.
No, but not primary, though. What's first?
A living being.
That's what I'm saying. That's very different, isn't it? Where does it fall in the top five? Is it fifth, fourth, third, second, or... We know it's not first, because living being was... That's, so George would, is at least five steps down, right? So when did people start first identifying themselves as members of nation states? 2,000 years ago, right? Maybe 500 years before that. We've come a long way since those books were written, right? Very long way. So what is the actual world we live in now? Well, what are the challenges that face us as human beings? What are the challenges? Chinese medicine has helped every culture that used it, with all the Asian cultures and now America and the West, face their survival challenges. What are our survival challenges? Let's look at them. The polar ice caps are melting. We're in the middle of the largest species extinction in 250,000 years. People with a 20,000-year-old form of consciousness are trying to get biological and nuclear weapons that they could never design themselves, right? They're not at a level of development where they'd have a science where they could ever design these things themselves, but yet they're trying to get them. There's no organic certifiable corn left on the planet because Monsanto has deliberately polluted the world's supply of seed. So you can't certify any piece of corn as organic anymore because the DNA proliferates. Well, that's enough. I used to use in the world's largest nuclear arsenal is in the hand of religious fundamentalists, but that changed in the last election. So the thing is that these survival threats are different from any that have ever faced human beings before. And what's different? They're not individual. Right? None of them are individual problems. Now, it might have looked 500 BC, or when the Shanghanlun was written, like the world was coming to an end when typhoid went through and 35,000 people died, and a person saw their entire village wiped out. They might have thought the world was coming to an end, but they were wrong. But now, right? We're at a very interesting point, because now the world could be coming to an end, and curiously, there's never been a better time to live. More people live better and in better conditions now than at any other time in history. Any acupuncture patient who can pay $35 a week for treatment, and that's low, right? Most of us charge considerably more. But anyone who can pay $35 a week for treatment exists in the top 15% of all human beings who've ever lived. Economically, in terms of social freedom, political freedom, religious freedom, quality of education, quality of nutrition. Anyone who can pay $35 a week for acupuncture treatment has more options available to them than the pharaohs had or the kings and queens of Europe. Do you think in 1870, the king of England could say, let's go out for dinner. You want Northern Italian or Southern Italian? Which of the 15 sushi bars do you want to go to? Or should we have Indian or Thai or Vietnamese? Or should we go to the Mongolian restaurant? What do you think? Which movie do you want to see tonight? You think? There are 15 different iPods. Which would I like? Do you see? I live in much, much better conditions. So we're practicing a potentially very, very deep form of medicine on the wealthiest, healthiest, most fortunate economic group of people who have ever lived. And the question arises, why are they the ones taking all the Prozac, getting all the psychotherapy, taking all the nutritional supplements? Well, don't you find that curious? We're working, we have a very deep medicine, and we're primarily using this profound medicine in the final analysis to do nothing more than help the most fortunate people who've ever lived feel more comfortable without having to change. So conservative people go to doctors and they take drugs and they get surgery so they can feel better without having to change. And new age people go to acupuncturists, homeopaths, and chiropractors. Right? You probably have some patients who have an eight principle practitioner for physical problems, a five element practitioner for emotional problems, a Jungian analyst for their dreams, a movement therapist. They go to Bikram when they're feeling cold, and they probably do yoga in a freezer when they're feeling too warm. And they've got everything set up. And they go, wait a second, I'm having an emotion, what is it? I remember when I was a kid, I had a friend and you'd go into his house and there was a tray by the couch and his mother had 40 bottles of medicine on it. I mean, there were 40 bottles. I was like, what is this? Is insane. And now, I mean, just look in your own herb cabinet. Did I feel something? I better take some Xiao Wan. Do you see? I'm feeling a little emotional. I better take some Xiao Wan. 2 hours later, I feel a little sedate. Maybe I should take some Bujang Ichi Tong. You see? See, people, they walk around. You see them walking around. She was just sitting here. I'm talking. I drive 3,000 miles to see her beautiful face, and she's sitting there like this doing Qigong. She's doing like healing chi, protect her from the New Yorker. See? Too much Zheng Qi in the room. I've got to relax my mind. So the thing is, so what do we do? We've got this profoundly deep medicine, which comes from an Enlightenment tradition, right? It's an Enlightenment tradition. The ancient text said the purpose of medicine is to help people fulfill destiny. The highest purpose of medicine was to help people fulfill destiny. So we've got this character Ming. Can you see that?
No.
I'm sorry. You know these markers. There's a technical word for these markers. I use these markers too. There's a technical word. It's called they suck. Okay, so we've got a triangle, heaven, human, and earth. The contract, it's a piece of paper, contract between us and heaven for having incarnated. Here we have the North Star, which is Governor Vessel 20, right? So that's light, that's Shen, that's consciousness. Right? Exploding light. That's the Big Bang. 15 billion years of an explosion. And then we've got the broad base. That's the unborn ground of being. The part of us that never enters the stream of becoming. Always exists beyond this world. And then we have man and woman standing between heaven and earth. And we have a seal, like a jade stamp, the authority of heaven on the contract, with the voice of heaven telling us our destiny, what we're here to accomplish in this lifetime. So that's Ming, M-I-N-G, GV4, Gate of Destiny. And then we have the Sun and the Moon, Gallbladder 24. Ming means enlightenment. Destiny and enlightenment, same thing. Homophones, same thing. The ultimate destiny of each of every human being is to become enlightened. So Chinese medicine is an enlightenment tradition. And we're using it to just help people feel relaxed and help them, you know, help them feel good. So at worst, we're helping the most fortunate people who've ever lived just feel better about who and what they already are. And at best, we're practicing compassion and eliminating suffering. But the cause of real suffering is not somebody's fallen arches or their sciatica or their infertility. When you have a population, okay, who are the most miserable people in the world? Are there the people living in Mumbai? Or the people living in Denmark? Where's the highest suicide rate in the world? Sweden, right? It must be really tough living there. What about Holland? It's got to be hard to live in Holland, because if you don't want to work, you just write a letter to your employer saying, I need time off for personal reasons, and then the state pays you. They get married, but they don't live with their partners. It's called apart together. Let's see. The women are beautiful and prostitution's legal. Hashish is legal, and they have the best jazz in the world. So if you've got all of that and you're still miserable, especially if you're a man, there is nothing to hold out for. Do you understand? So where are they more miserable? How come in the northern European countries with the higher standard of living in the world, you can measure Prozac levels in well water? It's because the ultimate cause of suffering, when all survival needs have been met in a human being, and a person has spare time and spare money, and all survival needs have been met, right? And they have leisure time. The ultimate cause of suffering is our own mind. People are suffocating inside their own heads. The major problem, the most important problem, the deepest problem in the demographic of people who can afford to pay for Chinese medicine. Now, I'm not talking about if you're doing a community acupuncture practice. I'm not talking about if you're treating drug addicts or homeless people. But in the people who can afford to pay what we charge, they're suffocating in their own minds. Do you see? They're suffocating in the face of a part of themselves that absolutely loves healing and has no intention of ever being healed. So how long have people been healing out here in California? Are they done healing yet in California? Well, are they done healing? We've had 100 years of psychotherapy, 50 years of the humanistic psychotherapy movement, LSD at Esalen, group sex, every kind of tantra, yoga, Woodstock, Burning Man, but I need more time to heal, man. I'm just getting started. You see, I'm just getting started. So if someone's a seeker, and if you knew someone who was a seeker for 10 years, you would say, this person is really serious. They're reading the books, they're going to workshops. Do you see? See, they're really serious. If they're a seeker for 20 years, you say, this person will not be daunted. But by the time someone's a seeker for 30 years without becoming a finder, wouldn't it be reasonable to suspect that they're up to something? That they have no intention of ever getting over it? So what kind of practitioner would we need to help people suffering from narcissism overcome their narcissism? If people's primary problem is that they're suffocating in their own minds, hypnotized by thoughts and feelings, convinced that there must be something, that at the core of their being, they're convinced there must be something terribly, terribly, terribly wrong. Do you see? And if the practitioner is also convinced that at the core of his or her own being there must be something terribly, terribly wrong, that they're going to need the rest of their life to overcome, then it doesn't matter if you're Eight Principle or Five Elements or Kiku Matsumoto or Richard Tan. Everything you do, no matter how much Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism, Advaita you've studied, no matter how many enlightenment experiences you've had, if you're convinced that there's a fundamental problem at the core of your being and you need the rest of your life to work it out, you're going to transmit that value to the patient. I mean, you can just see we're always transmitting our value systems to people. So if a practitioner is really upset that their whites aren't white enough, do you know what I'm talking about? So my whites aren't white enough. And a patient comes in, and you go, how are you doing today, Mildred? She said, I felt good after the treatment, but look at this ring around my collar. I have just the thing. You use new enhanced, I found this great product. It gets all the rings out of my husband's collar. And Mildred comes back the next week and says, what you did last week changed my life. My husband has never been so happy. You see, you share a value system with them. So the real depth of Mildred's agony, the superficiality, the pretense, because of course, you know, she wants to have the widest robes when she goes up to kneel at the guru's feet, right? She wants to have the widest gi in Taekwondo class. So she's spiritual. But the source of her agony is not the symptom that she presented with. So what we need is a generation of practitioners who have dropped their own past, overcome their own past for the sake of their patients. Which means, for me, if I was giving the national licensing exam, which I consider to be a test of your knowledge of medical anthropology, because there's nothing on the test relevant to clinical practice in the 21st century. Okay? That test was formulated by people in the 1980s who in the 1970s went to Europe and to Asia and studied 6 months. And they were just the first people in the door, so they designed a test, knowing almost nothing about the depth of the medicine. So if I designed a test, the first requirement would be that a person has gotten to a point in their own development where they have renounced needing any more time for themselves to heal at the level of consciousness, at the level of their own minds, at the level of spirit, at the level of soul. It doesn't mean you don't still have diabetes or that your hip doesn't hurt. It just means it isn't an excuse anymore for living. And we know this is possible because Christopher Reeves did it. We all know a lot of people, I'm sure we've all had patients or seen people in clinic who lived with horrific things that we'd hope and pray we never had to live with, and they did it with dignity. You see? And the primary virtue these people like this would have would be gratitude. Right? I'm sure Christopher Reeves in the final analysis had gratitude that he could still blink his eyes. Right? But people who are much more fortunate than that come in daily, don't they? Miserable. Not just over physical symptoms, which range from the complete petty symptoms to things which, you know, are painful and difficult, to things which are actually quite serious and profound. But you'll notice there's no relationship between how bad a person's disease is and the amount of dignity the person has. I've seen 32-year-old mothers who are dying of ovarian cancer who had, you know, 6-year-old daughters they were never going to see grow up, who are the sweetest, nicest people in the whole world, thankful for every bit of healing or compassion or relief they got. And I have people who've come in who they're just completely mean because it hurts right here and they can't play tennis in the big tournament. So people are crazy. They're completely insane. So from a certain perspective, if all of us saw a person like sitting on the street out here in their own urine and talking to themselves, we'd know they were nuts. But from the standpoint of true sanity, we're all completely crazy. We're all completely crazy. So what is a way to get a perspective of true sanity? Well, that's revealed instantly in meditation, if a person is doing real meditation. So if a person is really meditating, anyone who really meditates knows what absolute sanity is. Has anyone in here done serious meditation? Okay, when you're really meditating, is there a problem? Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't a large part of yourself trying to make a problem. right? It can feel like there's a problem. Your thoughts can be convinced there's a problem. But because you're not your feeling and you're not your thoughts, it's revealed that there isn't a problem. And you know there isn't. And you say, oh, that's just my mind. Look how completely insane and divided and messed up I am. So it doesn't take long to get to this. And once a person has discovered that part of themselves where nothing ever happened, nothing ever could happen, where there isn't any problem, something should change fundamentally, don't you think? Shouldn't this be something that everyone should know graduating from acupuncture school, that part of themselves where there isn't a problem? Don't you think? Wouldn't that be more important than anything else they could teach you? Because only if you, if your life, only if we really know that part of ourselves, are we going to be able to see that part in the other person? Otherwise, it's just a question of my whites aren't wide enough. Right? I need more time to heal. I need the rest of my life to overcome my past. So I'm going to understand why you need the rest of your life to overcome your past. And if all I want as a practitioner is to be a little more comfortable in my very, 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 very blessed life, then all I'm going to try to do is make people very comfortable in their very, very, very blessed lives without requiring them to change. And if I want to be left alone and I don't want to be asked to change, then I'm never going to ask anybody else to change. How much time does everyone here think we have left? 2 times ago when I taught at the Pacific Symposium, because I taught this fall, so it was maybe 4 or 5 years. Well, I know when it was. It was the year after 2001, year after 9/11. So 2002, I got up and I addressed the whole assembly, you know, like 500 people, and I said, well, look, I mean, maybe we have, what, 20 years left? And I heard that people, like, got really angry, especially the young students. But that was 7 years ago. That gives us like 13 years. And by now, I mean, do people think I'm nuts? I mean, look what's happening on the planet. So do we have endless lifetimes to work out what mommy and daddy did when we were 7 years old? Or what a boyfriend or girlfriend or uncle did? Or what we did? Do we have another 50 years to get over that before we live? Do we have endless time? So there are two parts of ourselves, two major parts. One part of ourself loves healing but is never going to heal. It has no intention ever of getting better. It has a pretension of getting better. It'll meditate, it'll do Tai Chi, it'll do yoga, it'll eat well, it'll do tantric sex. It loves all that stuff. But it's never going to overcome its problem. Because it is the problem. And it's not going to kill itself, believe me. It will kill you before it kills itself. And then the other part of us, that very best part of us, that arises continually out of what we call Jing, Qi, and Shen. The Chinese called it the true self, the authentic self. It can't even relate to healing. Not at the level of consciousness, because it's already always whole and there isn't any problem whatsoever. And it's the only source of healing that there is. What we call healing, we talk about Chinese medicine being spiritual, not necessarily. What we call healing is nothing more than a shift of identification, and it doesn't take time. A person spent all their life looking into their mind. The mind stores, it's an evolutionarily evolved mechanism to orient us in time and space by storing the past. And a person has spent 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 years staring into this box, referencing every moment they're alive to their past, trying to work out some problem in there, trying to work out some problem. That's what psychotherapy does, right? Psychotherapy exists solely in this realm. I'm going to work out the problem in there. And then there's another part of ourselves that can't even relate to the idea of having a problem, right? So that part of us we discover in meditation, is to anyone who discovers it, it's more real to us than any other thing we've ever known. There's an instant recognition. You go, my God, it's been there all along. It's spacious. It's infinite. There's no problem. And its highest will is to come into this world and make everything better. Every interaction, every eye contact, every word, every phone call, every needle placed, every herb given, its only motivation is to make things better. It's not interested in the past. It doesn't care. It's a rocket ship taking off, always taking off. It is the Big Bang at the level of consciousness, you see? And its motivation is straight ahead. Let's go. And you say, well, I'd love to. I'd love to, but I have this thing I have to work out. See? I have this problem. And the price to pay is you can't bring the problem. See, the taxi's at the curb. All the bags are loaded in. And this part of us, which is God, the voice of God, the evolutionary impulse, saying, let's go, let's live. I intend to live someday. And I don't know if it will be before I die in this lifetime. But I intend to live someday. But right now, I have a problem to work out. You see? And that's just it. When I teach all kinds of students from all kinds of, from every tradition in the world, Chinese medicine tradition. And everyone will tell you, I have no favorite tradition. There are plenty of New Age flakes practicing five-element acupuncture. There are plenty of New Age flakes practicing eight-principle acupuncture. Do you understand? We don't have a lot of time to screw around anymore and just create pleasant experiences, right, for people. What we're interested in is evolution. We really need, who should be saving the world now? Who should be leading us forward? Shouldn't it be the holistic integral thinkers who have possession of the greatest system of medicine integrating human beings into the cosmos that exists on this planet in this corner of the universe? Apparently for hundreds of millions of light years because we haven't found anything else. Yeah. So shouldn't it be us? I mean, are the Kalahari Bushmen going to save the planet? Are they going to take care of the Al-Qaeda and global warming? No, they're not going to do it. Is George Bush going to do it? No, George Bush isn't going to do it. Dick Cheney isn't going to do it. Who's going to do it? The holistic integral thinkers, right? The most educated people on the face of the earth. But not if their primary concern is overcoming their own past. Because if our primary concern is getting over everything we've experienced up to this point, we will never be objective enough to look into what the actual life conditions are on the planet at this point in history and come up with solutions that have never existed before. So in the face of this economic crisis that we have, don't you get the idea that an awful lot of people are just trying to come up with solutions to get things back to how they were before the economic crisis? That's the ego. The ego would be short for the mess. Right? Its sole motivation is to preserve the past. The creative impulse, its sole motivation is to create the future. It puts us in an interesting position in Chinese medicine because we're very proud of our 4,000-year past, but nothing in that 4,000-year past, nothing is going to help solve the problems on the planet today. If we're thinking about it in some 1968 to 1972 Earth Day kind of context, it's just not going to happen. So there's kind of a powerful field in the room now, right? Anybody? Meditator? What's your name?
Scott.
So is there a powerful field in the room? It's good, right? Everyone's paying attention. We're all together. One-on-one medicine isn't relevant anymore. It isn't relevant. It's not that it's completely irrelevant, but it's not the most important thing. It's just not the most important thing anymore. So where does that leave us as practitioners of what has traditionally been one-on-one medicine? It's an interesting question, isn't it? You kind of get the idea that the internet is like we've been building our nervous system external to us for the sake of hooking cultures and people up to each other, right? To generate a field. I mean, I find it hard to believe that evolution's been going 15 billion years so that pornography could be distributed cheaply. There has to be some greater thing, and the thing is connection between human beings. So the primary thing, the most important thing, the source of all healing, is that field between us. The recognition as practitioners in ourselves, as the part of ourselves that never enters the stream of becoming. It's always fine. It's always okay. And to be able to recognize that same part of each patient who comes in and relate only to that. And to awaken that, to liberate the creative impulse in the human heart and mind. So it just goes tearing through a person, and a person recognizes that in themselves, and they realize, oh God, I don't have a problem. You see? So what we need is the people at the leading edge to realize they don't have a problem and they've been living in the matrix. Okay? Because we're all very, 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 very lucky. Right? Except for your classmates who are out there having a beer and pizza, living the good life, who are missing this lecture. So you're going to have to be able to transmit something to them. So the thing is, the cultural context we were all raised in is a very postmodern, relativistic context. So we have certain values that we share. And those values are the values most of our patients who could afford to pay for treatment have. And this is what the values are. You have your truth, I have my truth, nobody knows the truth. It's not good to judge. I have my reality because my mind and my thoughts and my feelings create my universe. And you have your universe. And Hitler and Nelson Mandela are exactly the same. Because Hitler had good in him, because I saw a picture of him petting a dog. And Nelson Mandela yelled at Winnie, which shows he has a temper and an ego. And nobody can judge, and everything's equal. And nobody knows better than me, because my truth is as valid as anybody's truth. So we sit around in a circle trying to form a consensus. And a consensus means we have a problem in front of us, and we're going to hear from the least competent person in the room and the most competent person in the room, and come up with a solution that takes everyone's opinion into account so we don't hurt anybody's feelings. You're never going to get the best solution that way. If we're going to solve these critical problems now, we're going to have to make discernments. We're going to have to be willing to hurt people's feelings. And peace isn't the goal anymore. Can anyone point to any place in the universe where there's peace? Because I know everyone in here has idealized peace their whole life. But can anyone point to any place in the universe where peace exists or has ever existed? Someone said to me in like Santa Fe or Boulder, my garden. Well, it just depends how close you look. See a little worm coming up, stick, beautiful day, right? Crow comes. Just depends. It's a war out there, man. Who would want to be a little animal? You know what it's like for little animals out there? I see it in my backyard all the time, man. They eat each other. It's gross. So where is the peace? The goal isn't peace right now. We're past that. The goal is change. And it's not the kind of change that they talked about in the Tao Te Ching. So when Chuang Tzu said, I dreamt I was a butterfly, and I awoke and I didn't know if I had been Chuang Tzu dreaming I was a butterfly, or if I am now a butterfly dreaming I'm Chuang Tzu. There was no difference between Chuang Tzu and the butterfly. It was cyclic transformation, the five-element cycle, water, wood, fire, earth, metal, forever, in a circle. But we now know time is not circular, is it? Is time circular? Anyone notice that time isn't circular? We get pictures from the Hubble telescope. It's been going quite a while. 15 billion years. So 15 billion years of something coming forth from nothing shows quite a degree of intention, don't you think? Do you think God, the God of the Old Testament, when the meteor hit the earth and all the dinosaurs died, do you think he said, "Oh my God, I turn around for 1 minute, 14 billion years to create giant lizards, and look what happened. I think I'll go to Malibu for the weekend. Get a massage. I never saw this coming." So what do you think? The creative impulse, do you think it stopped for a second? A trillionth of a second? Straight ahead. Right? So that part of ourselves which is the creative impulse, that authentic self, that part of us which is the Big Bang, it's not concerned about the past. Its only goal is more integrity right now. More integrity, whatever I have to pay, whatever price I have to pay, more integrity right now. This is the value we have to transmit to our patients. Have you noticed there are a lot of people around here in California that can talk a very good spiritual line and have no personal integrity whatsoever? Anyone ever run into anything? Anyone? And what's their attitude? "You can't judge me. Hey, man. I was walking down the beach in Bolinas yesterday, and a stranger walked up to me and he said, 'Can I give you a hug?' And I was with my friend George. I hadn't seen George in 33 years, my best friend, fourth grade to my first year in college. He lives out here. And I looked at George, and George looked at me, and I said, 'Sure, hug me.' So I went up to give him a hug, and he kissed me on the cheek. No, on my neck here. In New York, he'd have been shot dead walking toward me smiling. And by the way, I mean, actually, there was nothing wrong with that. And I thought, okay, this is cool. The guy, you know, nothing wrong. But it's not everything, right? Do you get, didn't stop the polar ice caps from melting. And as loving as it was, and for that little moment of a feeling of peace, was there peace? We have to become a different kind of human being with different values. Can't spend our life living out there in Bolinas, getting up every day and clamming. Just thinking, it's beautiful, I love nature. I'm living in nature, you see. Is the human race ever going to live in nature again the way the American Indians did on this planet? I had somebody yell at me in Santa Fe. He said, "After the apocalypse." I don't think he'd seen Mad Max, though, because that's definitely not what it looked like in the movie. So the thing is, you know, Chinese medicine is very deep. It's very, very profound. It is an enlightenment tradition. Can you enlighten anyone by giving them herbs and putting needles in them? No. But consciousness is transmissible. There's only one consciousness in the universe, but we each have different knowledges, different degrees of knowledge of it, different capacities. We've all seen different amounts, different degrees, had different levels of spiritual experience, and we've all striven to different degrees to live up to what we've seen. Consciousness is transmissible. A medical practice is a fantastic vehicle for the evolution of consciousness, because Chinese medicine is so profound at purifying the vehicle. But when you're purifying the vehicle and moving the blood, which is consciousness, and draining the damp, which is burden, and moving the wind, which is delusion, when you're doing all of that, if you're just transmitting the same 1968 to 1972 narcissistic value system to the patient, you're actually just reinforcing the part of themselves that intends to be sick forever. We need a generation of practitioners who are free, who are really, 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 really willing to sacrifice their own pain and suffering and drop it. And it doesn't take time, and there really aren't excuses for those of us who would call ourselves healers, willing to do this for the sake of not just their patients, but the emergence of a new culture on the planet that is up right now for solving these problems, because it is too much to take for granted that the white guy on a cloud with a beard is going to work it all out for us. Because I flew here, I didn't see anyone up there. And I've looked at the pictures from the Hubble telescope. Do you know, if Jesus Christ's soul had ascended to heaven at the speed of light, he'd still be in our Milky Way? So it's just interesting. Because he can't go faster than the speed of light. And we pretty much got this Milky Way covered. So what I'm talking about really is a different level of maturity, growing up in an evolutionary sense. And you don't have to be 40 or 50 to do it. I mean, it's really a question of level of consciousness and what a person really, really, really wants in their life. So the thing is, even though here in the West at the leading edge we've been into spirituality for 50 years, most people are terribly cynical about enlightenment. They're terribly cynical about it. And most people actually, when they discuss it, even if they've read a lot and thought a lot about it, have no idea what they're talking about. Because enlightenment from a pre-modern point of view is an end state. So the Western myth was you die and you go to heaven and have ice cream and tea with all your friends for eternity. And the Eastern myth was you get enlightened and you're done. But there is no done. It goes forever. Enlightenment is an endless state of awakening. We've had enough information for 100 years. There is no end state. You know the TCM Yahoo News Group? Anyone read that? Good, don't. But I sign on there twice a year. It's always a mistake. I tell myself I'm like a hopeless addict. I'm just going to read one post. So I signed on for my one time in 6 months, and someone had written, "Do people here think that Dr. Tan's system produces better results than an integrated TCM diagnosis?" And I was leaving for the airport to go skiing in Colorado with my son, and I typed in, "It depends on what you think better results are." One sentence. So I'm out there skiing, and 5 days later I get this letter, email from Zev Rosenberg saying you have to sign on back to the Yahoo group and see what's going on. There are 140 emails. People are saying, "Jarrett's an arrogant bastard. How could he say that?" I don't even remember. I'm stretching. I have to do 5 minutes of research to get back to the initial post to see what I've said. And they're like, people are throwing mud and it's terrible. So I sign in saying, well, you know, essentially, if we're saying Chinese medicine is spiritual, it means we're talking about development and evolution of value systems. So whether you thought Richard Tan's system produced a better result than an integrated TCM diagnosis, it would depend on what either person on either side of that conversation valued. Do you see? What their values were. And it got to the point where people were so upset that I was bringing ethics and values into the conversation and personal integrity that a woman wrote the moderator and asked them to stop me from posting, and then she changed the topic to how to sterilize gua sha cups. And another woman brought up how to treat toenail fungus, and then no one would address the issue of ethics again. So the thing is, these are people who've been practitioners for a while. How mature could a person be? See, here's the interesting thing. In the context of I have my truth and you have your truth, what's the point of discussing ethics? It's a completely amoral context. I mean, if Charles Manson and Nelson Mandela both have their own separate truths, if Ayatollah Khomeini or Osama bin Laden, who's a mass murderer, is a freedom fighter from a certain point of view, even though he killed 2,700 people trying to kill 40,000, and if he's exactly the same as Gandhi, who was a freedom fighter, but the British didn't like him, so if all points of view are relatives, you can't discuss ethics, and you can't discuss personal integrity. Chinese medicine is the science of integrity. It tells you how yin and yang, jing and shen, hun and po, are coming apart. And it's the science of how to put them back together so that there's one. So all human beings are divided between the mess and the part that's just light. It's nothing but light. It's the light from the Big Bang. It's pure intention, pure consciousness, totally positive. Do you see? No problem whatsoever. And we're divided. We're divided messes between those two. And we have infinite good off to our right for eternity, and we have infinite evil off to our left, and we stand between them, and we're the ones making the choice. And there are, you know, and there are neutral choices, like do you want rice or do you want pasta? But beyond that, everything has implications, and it has ethical implications. And some choices are horrific, and they're bad, and they're wrong. And some choices are neutral, like rice or pasta or bread. And some choices are very, 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 very good, like I'll spend 28 years in prison to liberate South Africa. Nelson Mandela, right? Some choices are very, very good. And Chinese medicine is a science of integrity, and from an integral point of view, integrity doesn't just mean physical integrity, it means moral, emotional, spiritual integrity. Integrity just means one, to be integrated. It means there's not two, it means there's one. So as practitioners, we should be moving toward a point of integrity, right? Always striving. Integrity is absolute. There's no such thing as relative integrity. If you said, I want to go into business with George, does he have integrity? And if I said, most of the time. You go, what? You go, well, when doesn't he? Well, you know, I mean, he hasn't been in prison in, you know, months. Everyone can have a new beginning, starting over. Do you see? Starting over. So integrity is absolute, but it's also developmental, because no matter how much integrity a person has, they could always have more. The point of our medicine, beyond all the physical stuff, how much does the physical stuff matter? If a woman's or man's has sciatica, but her species is threatened with extinction, and all life on her planet is threatened with extinction, how important is the sciatica? And does she have to be sciatica-free to reach the level of development that it would take to make a radical difference on the planet in regard to the most important things? And the answer is no. Which doesn't mean that it's not good to cure sciatica. It just means we have to know what's most important. We have to know what's most important. So everybody has a bottom line. Now, most people don't know they have a bottom line. And almost everybody who does thinks that their bottom line is a lot holier and a lot hipper and a lot better than it really is. But a person's bottom line is going to dictate what choices they make when they're under pressure. A person's bottom line is going to dictate the outcome of their life in the final analysis. So if you're in a relationship with someone and love is more important than integrity, how is the relationship going to go? couldn't be good, because whenever you feel the love is threatened, you'll compromise your integrity for the sake of love. And then what does the love even mean if it has no integrity? You see? So everyone has a bottom line, and that bottom line in Chinese medicine, of course, has to do with the kidneys, and the foundation of kidneys is will. It's the spirit of the kidneys. And the fundamental question in terms of the water element is, what do I want more than anything else? What do I want? That's the foundation. What motivates me? What do I want more than anything else? And then after water, we have fire. So if I want to be free more than anything else, if I want integrity more than anything else, if I want to evolve more than anything else in water, in fire, I can't be a victim. Fire is a big victim, right? You betrayed me. God betrayed me. Daddy betrayed me. Mommy betrayed me. There are people making $150 for a 45-minute hour listening to that crap. There are because people are willing to pay it. Do you see? So in water, we want to be free. In fire, we renounce the right to be a victim of our own pasts. In wood, face everything, avoid nothing. In metal, take nothing personally. And in earth, all of this is for the sake of everything and everyone else. Only to the degree a practitioner is living that can they actually liberate a human being. If a practitioner is not living this, all you can do is move people around the cycle and help them feeling better. Five-element people, I'm from a five-element tradition. 99.99% of it is just helping people feel comfortable under the auspices of spirituality. It's providing experiences to people without requiring them to change. You can't change in a circle. You change when you see the circle as a complete delusion. The whole point of Taoist alchemy, the whole point was that the five-element cycle is a cycle of conditioned emotion, thought, and feeling, and the whole point was to get to the center, to escape it, and see through all of it. To see through all of it. That's the Tai Chi, the absolute position. To see through all of it. So in a culture where you have your truth and I have my truth, we've become very cynical about enlightenment, which would be the absolute perspective that's the same for all of us. It's the one perspective, the perspective that's the same for all of us. And the best the postmodern person can do is say, well, Hitler thought he knew what was best. You see? People are very paranoid about coming together for a high purpose because nobody knows what's really true and we all have our own opinions. It makes evolution and development impossible. And if we don't evolve, if the leading edge that came up during the 50s, 60s, and 70s doesn't evolve and move past that whole value system, there isn't any hope. We're not going to be able to solve Burning Man. Isn't going to solve anything. That doesn't mean it ain't art. It just isn't going to stop species extinction and global warming. And we're not going back to being tribes, and no one here would want to live in a tribe. In tribes, they perform clitorectomies. In Africa, they believe that you cure AIDS by having a sex with a virgin, and the Pope isn't helping by telling people that condoms cause AIDS. We're not going backwards. We have to go forwards. And we have a medicine that's very powerful in moving people forwards. But we've got to let go of the circle, because the circle isn't relevant anymore. We act as if those five elements are an eternal process. They're only relevant on this planet since the last ice age. Those five transformations didn't exist prior to the last ice age. What do you think spring was like during the last ice age? You think everything was budding? What do you think spring is like on Venus? Or Mars? Or Uranus? Pluto? What's summer like on Pluto? It's only something that's existed for 5,000 years, and the Chinese believing it was an eternal movement was no different than fundamentalist Christians thinking the whole world started 5,000 years ago, and that dinosaurs lived in the Garden of Eden. How could they have? Is that your idea of heaven? There are large flesh-eating lizards? It doesn't make any sense at all. Anyway, so that's all spontaneous, and I'll take questions for the next 45 minutes. Okay.